Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Jewel Ornament of Liberation, Chapters 20 and 21, Perfect Buddhahood and the Activities of a Buddha, by Lama Kathy Wesley. We all hear about enlightenment and spiritual awakening and Buddhahood. But what are these states, and how do they free us and others from the sufferings of the world? Lama Kathy concludes the KTC's overview of Gampopa's important A to Z Encyclopedia of Buddhist Practice with the description of enlightenment and the activities of enlightened beings. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Taksim Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
I'll start by saying good morning. I'm Kathy Wesley, and I'm representing the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling, and this is the I think it's the 11th or 12th episode in our series on the Jewel Ornament of Liberation. We're using Trungpa Rinpoche's book, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, which is based on this doorstop, the Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Gampopa. And so what we've been doing is giving a guide to the book, because as you can see, it's big. And it's not always easy, to understand, because it's written with lots and lots of scripture quotes in it. And so, in any case, it's a rather large book, but Trungpa Rinpoche's commentary makes it very easy to understand. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to start by reciting a short prayer. And the prayer I'm going to be reciting is a prayer of taking refuge. And I'm going to recite it in Tibetan. And if you know it, you can join in. And if you're unfamiliar with it, you can join in your heart and in your mind. And then I'll recite it a second time in English. O Sanje Chudon Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin So Ji Pe Sunam Ki Drola Penshir Sanje Druparsho Sanje Chudon So Chi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Da ji jin so ji pe sunam ki dro la pen shir sanje druparsho. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all suffering beings. Now I'll recite a couple of short prayers. Taja dindir chawa tsumpala kitan ne war stewa kunshine dudun papel samdun yushindru trashide le punsun so parsho. Deata shame shamawati shamita satru am kare marizite karata kayure tizuwati yuliana vishuda nirmale manapanaye kukuri kaka grase krasana omuki paramuki amuki shame 27 graha pandanane nigritiva savapara pra wadina vimukta marapasista vitva buddhamudra anangati to savamari putsarita parishudi vikat santru savamhara karmani. O Palin Sawe Lama Rinpoche Dagi Chiwar Pede Den Shola Kajin Jembo Gune Che Sunde Kusun Tuking Udrup Saldu So. Okay, thank you. The long mantra in the middle was actually recommended by Gampopa in his book for teachers to recite at the beginning of sessions, so it's kind of fun. Also, if you get a chance and you have access to YouTube, it would be great if you could go and you could check out this teaching, Four Dharmas of Gampopa, Which is being given right now on Karmapa's Karmapa's YouTube channel. He's been teaching for the last 7 days on the four dharmas of Gampopa, one of Gampopa's greatest texts from the 12th century. And it talks about, may our mind follow the Dharma, may the Dharma become a path, may the path be cleared of confusion, and may confusion dawn as wisdom. And so if you're interested in that, he's going to be, he's on day 7 of 8. So he'll be finishing it tomorrow. So you can look online to get the information and as to when he's teaching. So I heard the session's going to be a double session tomorrow. So stay tuned. He's been starting at 8:30 in the morning Eastern time. But we may have to look on YouTube to see what time the next one will start. Okay, so the purpose of us studying this book is to look at how the Karmakaju lineage, the lineage we belong to, how they've been teaching people Dharma for the last, I'm going to say like 900 years. And so in the 12th century, Gampopa gave us his version of the Dharma, which came from his two great traditions that he followed. He was a monk of the Kadampa tradition, meaning he got his teachings from the lineage of Atisha, the great Indian master who brought the new schools of translation to Tibet in the 10th century. And he also was a student of Mahamudra meditation from the great yogi Milarepa. And so Gampopa is sometimes called the person who joined two streams into one, meaning he took all of the mind training and bodhicitta teachings he got from Atisha's lineage, and he joined them with Milarepa's Mahamudra lineage to create a path to enlightenment that starts with the self-liberation path of the Hinayana, the great liberation path of the Mahayana, and then the mantra liberation path of the Vajrayana. So putting together these three yanas, he created the system that we now know today as the Karmakaju tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. And in this book, he systematized all of his teachings so that they would make sense. They would come in a specific order. And so I'm actually going to start with a little reading straight from the book. I'm wondering, can I screen share? Ooh, I can. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to do that in a minute. But meantime, I'm going to go ahead and read to you a little bit from the New Zealand edition of the Gampopa book. We're on page 309 if you have the book. It's the culmination. It's the last two chapters. We've gone through the entire path from chapter 1 to chapter 20, and now we're going to be covering the last two chapters today. So he says, he at first encourages his audience to generate the bodhisattva motivation for listening to Dharma teachings and think that they're receiving them for the benefit of all beings. He said, in the study of the jewel ornament of liberation, there are six main points that summarize the entire book. He has covered four points. The cause for achieving Buddhahood, that's the first point. The cause for achieving Buddhahood is the fact that we all have Buddha nature. That means we have a mind that can recognize its own nature and become liberated from the confusion and delusion of this world of suffering that the Buddha called samsara. In other words, our mind has the capacity to wake up from the sleep of ignorance. And we call this Buddha nature. So that's the cause for Buddhahood. So you already, all of us have the cause, which is Buddha nature. We all have it. And he says, then the basis to accomplish that is the precious human life. So the second, so the cause is number one. The basis is number two of the four points he's already covered. The basis is our precious human birth. In other words, we could have been born anywhere, anytime, but we were born here and now when the Dharma is being taught and liberation can be attained. And so we have both the cause, which is Buddha nature, and the basis, which is a precious human life. Then the third is the necessary condition. So there's a cause, a basis, and now the third point is condition. The necessary condition for Buddhahood to be attained is the spiritual friend, meaning meeting the teachers who will bring us the Dharma and teach us how to apply it to ourselves. It's great to have the cause, which is Buddha nature, and it's great to have the basis, which is the precious human life, but we need to have a condition to actually attain Buddhahood, and that is the presence of Dharma teachers in our lives. So that's the third point. And then the fourth point is the path. Let's see here. The means, which is called the means to accomplish enlightenment. So the means are the instructions we receive from the spiritual friend. So now we have it again. We have the cause, Buddha nature. We have the basis, precious human life. We have the condition, which is the spiritual friend. And then we have the means for attaining Buddhahood, which is the teachings of the spiritual friend. And in the teaching section, he covered all kinds of things. He covered taking refuge. He covered the bodhisattva commitment. He covered the practice of reducing ego fixation, which allows our Buddha qualities to manifest. By reducing our selfishness and ego fixation, our Buddha qualities of love, compassion, and goodness will naturally begin to be expressed and manifested. And so he then taught the six perfect virtues, generosity. He taught ethics. He taught patience. He taught diligence. He taught meditation, and he taught wisdom. And so by teaching these six perfect virtues, he gave us the means to attain Buddhahood ourselves. And now then he talked about, as part of this, he talked about the five paths of the Mahayana. He talked about how our practice progresses. A lot of people say to me, they say, well, how do I know if I'm making progress on the Dharma path? How do I know if I'm getting better? Kempo Kartha Rinpoche said, if you look back from today to a year ago, to 2 years ago, to 3 years ago, he said, you should see some small reduction in the amount of ego fixation you experience. And so that will show you, even if it's just a small amount, he said, this shows you that you're making progress. So he said, take the long view of years rather than a few days, a few weeks, and so on. And so, but there's another way to mark your passage through the Dharma path. That is to talk about the five paths, which were discussed previously in previous classes. The path of accumulation, the path of juncture, the path of seeing, the path of, I forgot the fourth one. And the last is the no more learning. I think that this one is, this could be the path of meditation. And then this could be the no more learning. I thought I had to memorize this. Just be careful when you think you've got something memorized. I was there. I was good until the fourth one. If somebody has the fourth one, type it in for me. The path of accumulation of, which is the accumulation of virtue. We accumulate virtue. We accumulate practice. We accumulate knowledge. We accumulate study. So that's the path we're all on right now. The path of juncture is when we put everything we've learned together and begin to meditate in earnest. The path of seeing is the fruition of that. Once we see our Buddha nature directly for the first time, there is no falling back, and we become what's called a first level bodhisattva. And then after that, we spend the fourth path developing and increasing our ability to rest our mind in Buddha nature. And then finally, we arrive at the end, which is the path of no more learning, where we have accomplished Buddhahood. And so these have been this is a brief review of the entire book up to now. So now we're going to talk about today's topic, which is enlightenment. I didn't even spell it right. I put it over in chat. Enlightenment. When many people come to the Buddhist Center to learn Dharma, their first question is, how can I chill out a little bit. I need to learn some mindfulness meditation so that I can calm down. And they have the very, they have the self-liberation or Hinayana motivation of just wanting to be more calm. And so we give the meditation instruction, and then as they relax their minds, they begin to see more possibilities in themselves, particularly possibilities to change from the inside, their ego fixation and their mental afflictions. And so they're not really thinking too much about enlightenment at the beginning, although they hear the word enlightenment, and they might have a feeling that they would like to do that if they could understand what it was. And but then later, as they begin the Mahayana section of their path, where they begin to wish for the liberation of themselves and all sentient beings from the confusion and delusion of samsara, when they begin to wish that for others, they begin to hear the word and think about the word in a different way. In our self-liberation phase of our practice, we're mostly thinking about being more calm and relieving our own suffering. But then when we begin to become aware of other beings suffering, then our motivation broadens and we begin to think about, well, I would like myself to become a Buddha so I can benefit others. But what does it mean to be a Buddha? What are the capacities of Buddhahood? What does a Buddha do? And so that's what these two chapters 20 and 21, that's what they're about. A lot of what you'll hear is related to the word jangchub. Jangchub is the word for enlightenment in Tibetan. J-A-N-G, second word, C-H-U-B or C-H-U-P, depending on which dialect you're speaking of Tibetan. So jang, the first word, means, purified. Jang means completely purified, completely clean. Boy, wouldn't we like to have a mind that was completely clean? Wouldn't that be great if our mind was completely free of mental afflictions and bad habits? That would be pretty nice. So a Buddha is completely free of all of those things. But then the Buddha is not just free of defects. He's full of, and he and she are full of qualities, because chup means a completely ripened. So jang is completely purified and chup is completely ripened. So jang chup or enlightenment. Now, Trungpa Rinpoche in his book also talks about the Tibetan word sanje, sang, which is the word for Buddha. So jang chup is the word for enlightenment and sanje is the word for Buddha. And you will remember sanje because you hear it in the in the refuge prayer, we recite, Sanje Chudang So Chi Cho Nam La. Sanje is the first word. And so Sanje means exactly the same thing. Sang means completely purified. And Je means completely ripened. At first, we may look at images of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. I have this picture of Tara behind me. So we may look at these pictures of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas resting serenely on lotus flowers, and we may say, gosh, that's nice, but that's not me. I'm not like that right now. I don't feel that serenity right now. But we have that potential within us. And if we practice the Dharma, as Gampopa was explaining, under the guidance of a spiritual friend, we will gradually become less selfish, more loving and kind, and those qualities of love and kindness and wisdom will start to manifest from ourselves naturally when our negative mental afflictions are purified. So the Buddha, Sanje, Jangchub, is the purification of everything that's negative and the ripening of everything that's positive. So I wanted to start with that before going any more deeply into it. We can all imagine what it might be like to be a Buddha, to be completely calm and serene, and to be completely full of wisdom and love for ourselves and for others. Spoiler alert, in chapter 21, he says that the Buddha's activities, he states them incredibly briefly, saying, with undiscriminate compassion, the Buddhas benefit all sentient beings without exception in whatever way is appropriate for that being. So I've already given you the end of the book, sorry, but I know people don't like spoilers, but that's what Buddhas do. They indiscriminately, without discrimination, without effort, and like the sun shining across the sky in the morning and across the mountains and the fields, the sun flooding over the horizon at dawn, does not discriminate, saying, I will shine on you, but I won't shine on you. The sun is not like that. That's a classic Buddhist example for what a Buddha does. The Buddha shines across all sentient beings and benefits them. So now that we've dealt with chapter 21 in brief, this way, if we don't get to it, we're good. Let's go to chapter 20, and I want to read a little bit more for you now. He says, now we have the full outline of the path. First, we begin with the resolution to accomplish Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. Then we practice the six perfections in order to accomplish it. I mean, really, if ego clinging is our problem, generosity helps to reduce the ego clinging of grasping. Ethics helps to reduce the ego clinging that comes from trying to overpower others. And patience, also, it overcomes anger, and so on. Diligence overcomes laziness, and then meditation and wisdom follow from all of that. So you can kind of see how they work. Some people say to me, do I have to practice the paramitas in order? No, it's probably good to be aware of all of them. I'm sure you could if you had the time to concentrate on one per month or one per week. But and you can do that for sure. Some people do. They map out a paramita per week. This week I'll work on generosity. This week I'll work on my ethics and so on. But you also can become aware of the things that you need to change most about yourself, and then work on the paramitas to help you change those things. That's in Kempo Karthar Rinpoche's book Dharma Paths. He said that's a good way to start. So anyhow, he says then we begin the six paramitas, or the six perfections, to accomplish Buddhahood. By going through the paths and levels of awakening, finally we accomplish the ultimate result, which is the three bodies of the Buddha. So I'm going to make a quick note here about the three bodies of the Buddha. The three bodies of the Buddha are an intellectual framework, an explanation, a method of explanation to explain how a Buddha manifests and how a Buddha benefits others. The best way to talk about the three bodies of the Buddha is to talk about what we have as ordinary people. What we have as ordinary people is we have a body, we have speech, and we have a mind. And right now, that body, speech, and mind are obscured by our mental afflictions. And so we can't really connect to our enlightened body, our enlightened speech, and our enlightened mind. But what if we could? What if we became Buddhas and had no longer the ignorance, confusion, and delusion of samsara? What if? Then our body would, I may have hit somebody's three dots up there and asked you to unmute. Sorry about that. We'll start with the mind. The mind would be fully awakened. And the speech would be fully awakened. And the body would be fully awakened. Meaning that we would no longer, our body, speech, and mind would no longer be restrained by our mental afflictions. And they give these qualities names. in this framework of the three bodies of the Buddha. So the three, it's just a way of talking about a Buddha. How do we talk about what a Buddha is and what the Buddha does? The three bodies, the word in Sanskrit is kaya of the Buddha, are the Dharmakaya, which is the enlightened mind. And then there's the Sambhogakaya. Sambhoga. Oh, yeah, of course. Autocorrect does not know how to spell Sambhogakaya. And that is the enlightened speech. And then the Nirmanakaya. Nirmanakaya is the enlightened body. And there are lots of other ways to define the Dharmakaya, the Sambhogakaya, and the Nirmanakaya. And so what I'm going to do for you now is I'm going to read to you what Trung Rinpoche has to say about this. He then goes into talking about purity and realization. He talks about the three kayas as being ways that the Buddha manifests after they attain enlightenment. Let's see what we see here, if I can find it really quickly. Oh yeah, here we go. The mind of the Buddha is referred to as the Dharmakaya, and it's called the Dharmakaya because all of the perfections of purity and realization. Purity, then, the sense that all defects have been removed, and realization in the sense that all qualities are complete. So the Dharmakaya represents the very nature of the mind of the Buddha. The Sambhogakaya is called the blissful Sambhogakaya. This is the aspect of the Buddha that is made after all suffering and hardships are gone. So the Sambhogakaya here is the expression of that great happiness and great bliss of being free at last from suffering. So the happiness that comes from being free from suffering and knowing that you're free from suffering now and forever. That's the Sambhogakaya. And the third aspect of the Buddha is the Nirmanakaya, which is called the compassionate Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya is the very expression of the non-conceptual, non-referential compassion that all Buddhas possess. And they have this for all sentient beings. Through the Nirmanakaya, the Buddha takes birth in our world and does so many things for the good of all beings. For instance, explained in the 12 deeds of the historical Buddha Shakyamuni. So these are the three aspects of perfect Buddhahood. So now we know that enlightenment consists of purifying completely all of our obstacles and obscurations, ripening all of our qualities of love, compassion, and wisdom, and how a Buddha manifests is through the three kayas, through enlightened mind, through the enlightened speech, and through the enlightened body. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the middle part, which is how does this happen exactly? So I'm going to, for that, let's see, I have a few minutes before we have to wrap up and go for questions. You can start now, if you like, to think about questions you might want to ask in a few minutes when we get to the question portion. Here we go. And you can type those in chat. So here we are on chapter 5. This is from the summary of the text at the back of the book. He says, thus one attains perfect Buddhahood of the three kayas by completely passing through all of the paths and levels of practice. The summary of Buddhahood is, and then as he does in all of his other chapters, Gampopa gives a list of his points so that you can memorize them. Because you have to remember, back all those centuries ago, not very many people had books. And that's why there's the four of this and the six of this and the 10 of this and so on in Buddhist teachings, so that you have a sense of which ones you know. And if you know them all, if you know all four of the Four Noble Truths, then you know you have that, and so on. So he divides all of his chapters into these same points: nature, classification, definition, reason for the definite number, characteristics, and special traits. There is a lot of book memorization that happens in Tibetan monastic colleges. And so that's why all of these intellectually based numbering systems are created for the monks and nuns to be able to memorize these and commit them to their heart. You and me, we don't have to do that. We have books, so we're pretty far ahead on that. You can just see how faulty memory can be. The first topic is nature. The nature of a complete perfect Buddha is perfect purification and perfect primordial wisdom. Perfect purification means that all the defilements and cognitive obscurations have been eliminated. Perfect primordial wisdom is that of sublime awareness of reality as it is, and of that omniscience. Then he goes through the second point, which is the significance of the name. We did talk about this. Why is one called Buddha? One who is fully awakened. There's our song of Sanjay, from ignorance as from sleep, and fully blossomed. That's Jay. The discriminating wisdom into the two knowledges. That's the knowledge of both how things appear and then the knowledge of how things really are. Those are sometimes called the two truths. So that's then, of course, classification. Then this is why I explained the terms to you earlier: Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. So again, the Buddha manifests in these three ways. Definition of these. Dharmakaya is what the Buddha really is, meaning fully awakened and liberated. The two form bodies, the Nirmanakaya and the Sambhogakaya, should be understood to manifest through the combination of the magnificent blessings of the Dharmakaya, the subjective experience of beings, and the previous aspiration prayers. It should be understood that they appear when these three conditions have come together. Now, here's something interesting. The before, during, and after certain practices, we recite something called aspiration prayers. We aspire to things like, may I, like in Shantideva, he wrote the greatest aspiration prayer that I think I've ever seen, which is chapter 10 of the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Chapter 10, he says, through my merit, may all of these great things happen. And in chapter 3, he talks about what he as a bodhisattva hopes to accomplish. May I become, until every illness has been healed, may I myself become the doctor, the nurse, and the medicine. May I become food if people need food. If they need a servant, may I be their servant. If they need a boat, may I become a boat. So we make all these aspiration prayers now while we are not enlightened beings, so that when we do become enlightened beings, those qualities and activities can manifest. If we haven't planted the seed for something, we can't have the fruit of that thing. So this is why we emphasize the recitation of aspiration prayers. At first, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, our founder and teacher, said we should do these aspiration prayers in Tibetan. As he got older, he said it would be good to do them in English as well. He said, so that you can really internalize those aspirations, so that when you become a Buddha, you will know exactly what to do. So that's something I wanted to share a little bit with you. So it says these the two form bodies. There's a prayer that says the Dharmakaya, that means the enlightened mind of the Buddha, through compassion, the Dharmakaya through compassion manifests as the two form kayas, Nirmanakaya and Sambhogakaya. And here, he'll talk about this in a minute. And this this is how the Dharmakaya appears to us, because you can't have contact with the enlightened mind of a Buddha. It's an enlightened mind. So what's interesting about it is, though, that it's also the nature of all things, which is a whole nother class all by itself. But for the meantime, we'll talk about it as the enlightened mind of a Buddha. So he's saying they should be understood to manifest through the combination of the magnificent blessings of the Dharmakaya, the subjective experience of beings, meaning that we have compassion. We who become Buddhas have compassion, and we fully understand what makes beings suffer. Why? Because we were once a suffering being ourselves. So since we know suffering, we know how they suffer, and we can feel their pain. And then the fruition of our previous aspiration prayers. It should be understood that when they appear, these three bodies of the Buddha, they appear when these three conditions come together. The reason for the definite number of three kayas, it is out of necessity. Dharmakaya is for one's own benefit, and the two forms are for others' benefit. I'm not exactly sure of the best way to explain necessity here. Let's see what Trungpa Rinpoche says to see if we can get some insight about that. He says, and this is on page 316, the fifth point tells us why there is a definite number of kayas and why there are particularly three. What we need to achieve is twofold. We need to achieve the benefit for ourselves and the benefit for others. This kind of achievement must be the ultimate form of achievement, not just something that is beneficial in the short term, but ultimately beneficial on the best possible of all levels. So the value that we must achieve for ourselves must be the best possible, and this is done through achieving the Dharmakaya. This accounts for one kaya. So in other words, we have to accomplish two benefits, the benefit of ourselves and the benefit of others. So when we attain Buddhahood, the Dharmakaya is symbolic of our benefit for ourselves. Our mind has now been liberated. And the Nirmanakaya and the Sambhogakaya are how our mind benefits others. This can be accomplished. The value for others must also be the best possible value. This can be accomplished by way of the two form kayas. Because there are two types of beings, unenlightened beings and enlightened beings. There are two kinds. Those who have impure karma, meaning they're not enlightened, are helped through the Nirmanakaya, the average human being that manifests as a Buddha in our world and in our realm of experience, and the Sambhogakaya, which is how the Dharmakaya manifests to those who are already awakened and who have superior vision and insight. This is why there are three, because we have the benefit for ourselves, that's Dharmakaya, and the benefit for others, which are the two form kayas. That's why there are three. Then he says, and then under the last point, I'm sorry, the second to last point, he says, Dharmakaya is merely labeled as the exhaustion of all errors and what is delusory through realization of the meaning of the all-pervading emptiness of all phenomena. In other words, when we come to a realization of the emptiness of our own self-concept, as well as the emptiness of all things, and by empty here, we don't mean zero, we mean the unestablishedness of them. In other words, nothing is permanent, not that table, not that chair, not that tree, nothing is permanent, everything is impermanent, and everything is changing. So things are not solid, real, permanent, unchanging. They're always in motion and always changing. And so our delusion is that we try to imagine that they're permanent, solid, real, and so on. Emptiness means that things are empty of solidity, they're empty of permanence, and they're empty of changelessness. Anyway, they change and so forth and so on. And so then he says here, it can be explained as having eight characteristics. And so this means the exhaustion of errors and the ripening of qualities. The Dharmakaya has eight characteristics. Sameness, meaning it never changes. Profundity, meaning it's the most amazing thing you can realize. Permanence, that means it has no beginning, no end, and and it will never degrade. Oneness, in other words, it is singular in its accomplishment. Perfection, purity, radiance, and relationship to enjoyment. The relationship to enjoyment, again, is this idea that that because we are free at last from samsara, that we have the bliss and happiness that is permanent and unchanging. In Trung Rinpoche's book on page 317, he talks about the various form qualities of the Buddha, how the physical form of the Buddha is perfect and so on. And then there's one more thing here. Permanent. Yeah, I thought I would tell you about this one because this got misunderstood back in the day when this teaching was given on Dharmakaya being great permanence. Some people misunderstood and thought that that these Buddhists who practiced this had actually become deists. In other words, they believed in a god, and they thought that Dharmakaya was being treated like God. And because it was permanent and changeless and all of that. And it was a very fine, delicate, and subtle intellectual point that some people didn't understand. And there were some fights about it. But by permanence here, according to Trungpa Rinpoche, it is permanent insofar as it has no beginning, no middle, and no end. It never comes into being or ceases to be. We all have Dharmakaya as our nature. We just haven't realized it yet. And so I think I'll stop here for now in talking about the chapter 20 and talk about the, you can read these about the eight characteristics of Dharmakaya, the eight characteristics of Sambhogakaya, and the eight characteristics of Nirmanakaya. You can read about that in Trung Rinpoche's book to get all the details. But the final topic, the activities are benefiting beings without conceptual thought. Now, how would it be if you could benefit others without even thinking about it, just effortlessly like the sun shines? And you'll see that image given here. He says in chapter 21, he said, first one develops bodhicitta, then the path is practiced, and eventually the fruition Buddhahood is accomplished. All of these are done for the sole purpose of dispelling the suffering and establishing the happiness of all sentient beings. So this is the summary of chapter 21, the final chapter in the book. Without conceptual thought or effort, Buddhas manifest benefit for sentient beings spontaneously and unceasingly. Enlightened activity is summarized in 3 points. The noble bodies of the Buddhas, without conceptualizing, accomplish the benefits of beings. Likewise do their magnificent speech and noble mind. Here he talks about, in the summaries, he gives quotations about the body being just magnificent and so forth, being like the bodies of the gods and so forth. Then they talk about those who enter the highest path, they cultivate faith and virtue, and they will see the forms of perfect Buddhas adorned with the major and minor marks perfection. They'll see them manifest various activities, walking, standing, sitting, sleeping, teaching, and so forth. By seeing them, they'll develop devotion and motivation to accomplish Buddhahood themselves. So even just being seen or being thought of by a being helps to uplift people and let them know that liberation is possible. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche was asked once, well, how do we work with beings who have very coarse and violent personalities? And he said, well, you know, you can't teach Dharma to them, but you can show them images of the Buddha. And so showing them images of the Buddha, they will have the seed. The seed of their own Buddha nature will be watered by seeing that image of the Buddha. It'll uplift them in a way they can't explain because it's they're looking at themselves and who they could become. And then these beings who are inspired, they will engage in the cause, the cultivation of bodhicitta and so forth, and eventually achieve it. It's a done deal. From the moment you know about a Buddha, even if all it is you see an image, it's a done deal that eventually you'll become a Buddha yourself. The appearance of the Buddha's form kayas manifest with no conceptual thoughts or movement. In other words, they don't have to even think about it. They just benefit being spontaneously. And then their speech is like the drum of the gods, which was said to penetrate everywhere. And the spontaneous activities of the mind. And by the way, the speech of the Buddha, it meets everybody where they are. You don't have to really even understand the language to learn from a Buddha. And they meet all beings where they are. And then finally, the spontaneous activities of the mind to benefit beings are like a cloud. This is a simile for how the wisdom mind benefits beings without conceptual thought. For example, in the summer, clouds gather in the sky without effort, causing crops and so forth to grow perfectly through the rain falling on the ground without conceptual thought. Likewise, the activities of the wisdom mind ripen the trainee's crop of virtue through the rainfall of Dharma without conceptual thought. So we made it. We got to the end of chapter 21. This was just a brief review of what's in the chapter. And as you read the book, these little talks that we've been giving over the last few weeks will help to guide you to the important points of each talk and hopefully summarize them for you so you can see that this path that we are all on together, this path that we are on is a path that has a purpose and brings happiness even while we're on it. In Jhamgun Kantrol the Great's book, The Great Path of Awakening, he talks about the path of Dharma in this way. He says, I shall now explain the path on which the victorious one, the Buddha, and their children have traveled. Easy to understand, it's not corrupted. Easy to practice, it's entered with enthusiasm, yet it is profound, so Buddhahood is attained. He's talking about bodhicitta, of course. So easy to understand, it's not corrupted, means that you can't get tied in intellectual knot when you try to study love and compassion. Easy to practice, everybody loves love. So it's very easy to practice love for yourself and for others, as opposed to practicing other types of discipline like exercise. I'm not talking about myself or anything here. And then it's profound, and meaning that if we want to cut through ego fixation, you don't need a tool to cut through your ego fixation. You don't need a physical tool to cut through it. Love will actually cut through selfishness. And in that way, we can attain Buddhahood. Okay, I've talked enough. If it's okay with you, I'd like to have like 10 minutes of questions. It will cause us to run slightly over to about maybe 12:35, but I won't keep you any longer than that. So if people have questions, you can start. Unmuting is now enabled. Please remember to unmute when you're done speaking and to mute when you're done speaking. So thanks. So people can either type it into chat or ask a question. Would you mind saying a little bit about how Dharmakaya is not God? Yes. Yeah, I know it's really funny. I can't hear it, but everybody else can hear the question. Could be something in my, it could be a little glitch in my side of the Zoom app. I'll hope for the best. Okay, this is a really interesting question. Let's see if I can. Okay, I'm working on a recollection that I have of Kempo Kartha Rinpoche being asked the question. Let me answer it by telling you a story. Kempo Rinpoche was asked once, do Buddhists believe in God? And he said, well, that depends, which is really interesting. That's like the lawyer's answer, right? He says, it depends on how you define God. He said, if you think that God is a person with a personality who has likes and dislikes and lives somewhere, he said, we don't believe in that. We do not believe in that. But if you think of God as being the inexpressible nature of all things, he said, then I could say we do believe in that. This sort of inexpressible, you can't even describe it. Inexpressible or ineffable, maybe that's the better word, ineffable nature of all things. He said, then we would believe it. We would say that we believe in that because it's thought, and I only know this from the teachings I've heard. I don't have like direct knowledge of this myself, but the nature of our mind is it's said to be empty luminosity. In other words, it's emptiness and luminosity. So those are the two characteristics of our mind. Emptiness means that mind is not established as a material thing. So, for example, mind has no color, no shape, no location, no beginning, no end. It's not made of matter. And yet, even though it's not a thing, it's not a thing, a tangible thing, the mind is not a tangible thing, but it's not nothing, because it knows and experiences things. So the mind has the capacity to know itself, to know other things, and to experience things. All that is going on in our minds right now, where we have the appearance of objects appearing to us, those objects that appear to us are appearing actually in our mind. That's the luminosity aspect of mind. And so our capacity to cognize and to experience, our ability to cognize and to experience is the luminosity aspect of our mind. And so, interestingly enough, this sort of emptiness and luminosity is the nature of all things as well. Trungpa Rinpoche, in one of his books, says, you could walk around all day analyzing the nature of all things, saying, huh, that doesn't exist. Huh, that doesn't exist. Huh, that doesn't exist. He said, but that's very tedious. You know, he said, it's better to recognize the nature of our mind as Dharmakaya. And then he said, we don't need to worry about objects having the nature of emptiness and luminosity. He said, we don't have to worry about that. He said, it'll take care of itself. I don't know if that helps. Let's see. Did that help with the, you can, yeah, was that helpful, Caitlin, was that helpful with the thing? Yes. Okay. Very good. Yeah. So I thought that was a really clever answer that Rinpoche gave. You know, he said, it depends on how you define God. If it's a person who like did stuff and lived somewhere, he said, we don't go for that. But, you know, I've actually heard Christians define God and in that second way, as the ineffable nature of all things. So, hey, Vince, I see your question. Regarding the Nirmanakaya, can Buddhas manifest into sentient beings, physical phenomena such as a bridge? I am told, based on my reading of Shantideva, the answer is yeah. And how that's possible, I really don't know. But I also know, and I've been told by the Tibetan teachers that And this is actually explained in detail. I kind of skipped over parts of chapter 20, and I hope you'll forgive me. Actually, this is probably more in the aspects of the five paths. It's in the levels of the path. It's not that I skipped it. It wasn't in the chapters I covered. It was in chapter 19, the levels of the path. If we get into the levels of awakening, it basically, let's see if we can go to... I'm going to try to open the pages here. The first quality, the first level of the Bodhisattva awakening is called overwhelming joy. And among the things that happen, he says, oh yeah, he's talking about how we can benefit many, many sentient beings. But if you look into chapter 19 in the big copy of the root text of the jewel ornament, he will say, here it is. Wow, that helps. Distinctive abilities. This is on page 266 of the Kempo Kunshuk Jaltsen version. He says, this first level bodhisattva, it says, they can, in one moment, enter 100 different types of meditations and see 100 Buddhas and be perfectly aware of their blessings. They can
appear in 100 different places simultaneously and abide for 100 kalpas. So, and then it just goes up by each level of awakening, their capacity to emanate in different forms and to benefit beings just magnifies. But I see something in here. There's a catch. They talk about footnote number 4, saying if they are fully renounced, and I want to know what that means. Now they got me curious. That is, if a person is a monk or a nun. So we may not have the same characteristics as lay people as monks and nuns can do, because they have they're considered to have pure virtue. So I'm going to have to ask Kempa Ergen about that little detail. It's like, hey, wait a minute, Kempa Ergen, what about us lay people? Can we manifest in 100 places too, or do we have to go back to school first? I will definitely ask that question. Oh yeah, I know. I'm on my home Wi-Fi system, and yeah, it's not perfect. Someone asked me to repeat the luminosity. Oh, by the way, I hope that answered your questions, Vince. I am told that. I don't have personal experience of it, but I know that the reason we make these aspirations, like the aspirations in chapter 3 of Shantideva, the reason we do that is so we can be a raft, a bridge, and all those things that people need. So then it said, the next question is, can you repeat luminosity? Okay, regarding luminosity, luminosity is the capacity for our mind to experience. Here's an example. Mind is not established. That's its emptiness. It doesn't have a color, a shape, a location, a beginning or end, and it's not made of matter. So it's not a material thing. And yet it's not nothing, because it knows. Our mind can know things and can experience things. Like right now, we're experiencing seeing each other over Zoom. And we can experience that in our minds. And that's the luminosity aspect. I hope that helps. Got time for another one. Did I hear another question? Okay, looks like we've come to the end of questions. So, you know, I'm really grateful for this opportunity to talk about the Jewel Ornament. It is not the easiest book to study. And a part of the reason I like the Kempo Kunchuk Jeltsin version is that it has extensive footnotes, has great index, and it also, at the back of the book, it tells the stories, some of the stories and the parables that are alluded to in the book itself. Gampopa will say, like the story of such and so, and then he'll put the story of such and so in the back. So you'll be able to see what point Gampopa was trying to make by saying, you know, like the story of such and so that happened. So anyway, so that's why I like it a lot. So I'm happy to have been part of this book study, and I hope that we're going to have all of the episodes on our YouTube page, and all of the episodes will likewise be on Facebook. And so I thank you for your time and attention. The next book we will be studying. I'm sorry, the next set of Dharma talks we will be given on specific topics. So if you have a specific topic you would like to request us to cover, please send me, you can either send an email to info@columbusktc. Or you can send it to me, Mama Kathy, as I mentioned before. So if you have a particular topic you'd like for us to address, you can send me a message, and I'll get with the team and the team of senior meditation instructors and the lamas and me. We get together every 6 to 8 weeks and plan out our Dharma talk schedule. And that will start, I think, next week. And off the top of my head, I didn't write down which talk we're giving, but Lama Adam knows. I'll ask him to put it out and publicize it. Thanks for that. So let's dedicate our merit from today's session, making the aspiration that all beings are free from suffering, come to happiness, and then arrive at Buddhahood. And arriving at Buddhahood, may they, like the sun, spread and benefit in all directions all sentient beings. I'll recite the short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Okay, everybody. Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.